It is Tuesday, 11th of May, 2021, and it is 10:13 p.m. So what is your full name, and what are some primary things that you do on a day-to-day? For example, like your job, your extracurricular activities, or anything like that.
My name is Olivier Michel René Duguay, and I am actually the CEO of my own company in renewable energy in Southeast Asia, based in Singapore, and active in Southeast Asia. So every day I'm in touch with my teams in different part of Southeast Asia, different countries, trying to run the operations from abroad, depending on where I am. That's basically it.
Do you have any extracurricular activities that you do on a day-to-day?
I try to stay in shape and do sports and read. Read and read and read.
Okay. Where do you live right now, and what's it like to live there?
Right now I'm for a short period in France, near Paris. We are under lockdown partial lockdown after 7 o'clock, I think. We'll have to stay home and not moving from home. And until lately, we were not able to move outside of the district hotel, the department in France. So not moving out of from a 10 kilometers radius around our home, unless you have reasons to do it, professional or family reasons to do it.
Right. Do you have any idea of when that lockdown will be lifted, or not at all?
Yes. The president of France just announced that it's going to be lifted soon. I think it's next week for the regional lockdown, or the local lockdown, is lifted already. I think we can now move out of from last weekend. We can move out of this 10 kilometers radius without any proof. So and reason. So that's good. The non-essential activities and non-essentials shops and activities are closed and will be reopened for only the outdoors part next week. So next week, all the outdoors cafe, restaurants, exhibitions, everything will be open again. So it's on the way to the partial reopening that should happen mid-June. By mid-June, the restaurants will be able to reopen again in limited seating capacity. But there is a national plan to reopen the country here in France. I will not be in France anymore very soon, because I will move back to Southeast Asia. That's where the situation is much more difficult, because there is a third wave of COVID-19 infections going in nearly all the countries in Southeast Asia. So that means that there are quarantines. So I will have to quarantine 14 days upon arrival. Even if I am vaccinated, I've been vaccinated last week with the J&J vaccine, so I'm fully vaccinated already. But even so, I will have to be quarantined 14 days upon arrival, with, of course, a negative test before arrival, upon arrival, and after 14 days. So, and that's for I will go to Phnom Penh, Cambodia, for my business, but it would be the same if it is exactly the same requirements for Singapore, Vietnam, Thailand, nearly all the countries in Southeast Asia. Of course, because I'm not a tourist. I have a business visa. Tourists are not allowed for the moment to visit all these countries.
Right. That makes sense. When you first learned about COVID, what were your thoughts about it at the very beginning?
At the very beginning, we never envisioned that it will be such a widespread pandemic in the worldwide, and will affect worldwide operations. I think that's the first thing we thought. It was okay. It's in China, okay, right? It's maybe going to spread a little bit, outside of China, and maybe in the U.S. First. Maybe in Europe also, but it will be contained. And in fact, of course, we know that it was not the case.
Right. My next question actually goes with that. And how have your thoughts changed on COVID-19 since you first heard about it?
The dangerosity of the disease is also something, it's something... difficult to grasp. We know that it's spreading very, very easily, and so that's frightening, of course, and it's infecting all human activity, I think, on the planet. But on the other hand, in fact, the actual morbidity or death rate is not that high. It doesn't seem to me that high. So of course, it's impacting some part of the population much more than the others, but in fact, given the number of infected people, the death rate is quite small. But of course, the infected people numbers are absolutely enormous, gigantic. So, but in fact, the morbidity compared to other pandemics, this doesn't seem to be. Really deadly, I would say, with a high death rate. Anyway, we must, of course, protect ourselves, of course, of any risk. But in fact, the death rate right now is not that high, I would say.
Right. Has the pandemic affected your job? And if so, in what ways?
Yes, of course. First of all, myself, I used to travel every week from one country to another, because we are operating in different countries in Southeast Asia, namely Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, Singapore, Philippines. I would say mainly, and also Myanmar and Indonesia and Laos on the side. But I used to travel nearly every day between these countries to follow and to have meetings, business meetings, and follow our operations. And because of what I just mentioned, because of the quarantine rules and restrictions in travel that these countries put in place very, very early, to stop the pandemic, it has affected, of course, my personal professional life and our operations, meaning that all our teams have been stuck basically in their own country, not moving between the countries possible anymore, excepting these 14 days, each time. We have cut a lot in our travel expenses, travel budget, in our business dealings, of course. Moving everything online, which was not that particularly easy at first, just because in Southeast Asia, the level of development of these countries is unequal, I would say, to say the least, and most of them are not used to this kind of Zoom dealings or online conference calls. It's much still relies much on personal relationship and personal relationship that you face to face in face to face meetings. So I participated in one of the biggest meeting I had in last year was in interministerial meetings with two ministers and a lot of secretary of states in Cambodia, and it was the first meeting held online because I was not able at that time to be present in Phnom Penh, and I was on again very big screen in a very big meeting room with a lot of people. We did it. It was a little bit more difficult than face to face for a face to face meeting, but we did it. It was the main official one. But since then, no other type of official meetings have been held. So it was postponing impact. Basically, the impact on our operations was to slow down a lot all our business dealings, mainly with the governments, government entities in all the countries. So they in some countries like Thailand, for example, they shut down any face-to-face meetings. It was not possible anymore with officials. So just online and again, slowing down tremendously all our operations. So that's more on the day-to-day basis. On the macro picture, all the governments in these countries, in our countries of operations, are facing, of course, a decrease in energy consumption and energy demand. Because of course the activity, the overall activity, economic activity going down. So they started questioning really their need of renewable energy, and that we are dealing in, we are working in renewable energy and implementing new projects, new generation capacity, and nearly everywhere, all the governments posed in fact all their plans to expand and to develop renewable energy anymore in the future, waiting for more visibility, waiting for energy demand to resume, which for the moment it's starting coming back in Vietnam, for example, but in other countries like Thailand or Cambodia, it's still very low. And the recovery, the economic recovery is still very slow. So they're still, for the moment, holding up their expansion plans, energy expansion plans, and development, energy development, long-term development plans, waiting for more visibility to come back. So that's, in fact, that will impact our operations and starting to impact our operations this year, in fact, instead of last year. It has a lagging effect, because we are dealing with multi-years development time and multi-years projects.
Right. What concerns do you have about the effect of the pandemic on the economy more broadly?
I think we have turned the corner. I think with now. Vaccination being implemented, very quickly in most developed countries, just coming in the emerging countries. That's the answer, of course. That's the answer to end this pandemic and to return to a safer world and to resume economic operations, of course. So I think that we have turned the corner, definitely. We can see that. We can see that in the US. We can see that in Europe coming. Again, with a lagging effect coming to the emerging countries in Southeast Asia. Singapore, of course, being in the lead, but being a very open economy, all around Singapore, all the economies are closed, Singapore will stay closed. So in fact, there's nothing they can really do. So yes, we have turned the corner. I think the economy will come back, and I think with a vengeance. I think it will come back even stronger than before. The rebound will be very pronounced. And the issue for me, for us, for my sector, is will And that's a real question. It's a real, very important question, I think, for the future is, will the countries, will the governments take this opportunity, as in the US, they say, and build back better, to bring economic activity back with a lower CO2 content and CO2 emissions, and will they take that opportunity to rethink think again of the future and of a low carbon future? So that could have a direct impact on, of course, our activities. Some countries are doing it, like the US, like the EU. The EU has also a Green Deal. It's not a new Green Deal, but it's a Green Deal underway, which is really comprehensive, really impressive, and massive. So as usual, I think on this, Europe is ahead of the rest of the world. With China and with some part of the U.S., I would say, of course, California is ahead. But with now President Biden, it seems that the U.S. will come back also on the scene. So that's great. That's great to see. Unfortunately, I'm not working in these countries, so it remains to be seen when, because it's not if it's when it will reach the shores of Southeast Asia, and so that remains to be seen. So we are seeing part of it. Thailand, for example, the most, of course, advanced economy. That's the second largest economy after Indonesia, but the most advanced country after Singapore. Thailand is definitely thinking about it and will implement drastic changes in their energy consumption and the CO2 emissions they are thinking of. So they're going to be much more ambitious in the renewable energy plans, and that's good for us. We've been waiting for that for the last 6 years, so it's great. Long wait, but it was maybe worth the wait. And the interesting part is that. Just also the macro picture, they're doing it because of the Paris Agreement, and this year we'll see again in Glasgow, as you know, at the end of the year, the COP26, so another UN big gathering, to fight climate change. But it's not really these commitments which are pushing the Southeast Asian countries to do it. It's more in case of Thailand, private companies. In fact, the private companies, the private manufacturers are saying, we need to buy renewable power. We need to buy green power. We cannot, continue to produce our goods to export to the West, to the US, to Europe, while using coal power, for example. So we need to go beyond the goods we are producing to see how they are produced and which is the carbon content. And that's very new. That's very positive, of course. And that means that, for example, for Thailand, they are really rethinking the way they can attract or keep or retain they are industrial based, so all the manufacturers, all the factories, and to do so, they need to, procure carbon free energy or low carbon energy. In the case of Thailand, again, as they are one of the largest car manufacturer in Southeast Asia, they are of course thinking of the EV revolution, the electric vehicles, and for themselves they are implementing also targets for themselves to, for example, by 2035, 50% of the new cars sold in Thailand will have to be EV, which again might be comparable. in different ways, but might be comparable to the EU targets. But that's very, very aggressive. And they are thinking of 100% of all new vehicles sold in Thailand 10 years later. So that's really, really, really impressive. And they know that it's... Why are they doing this? Because they know that it means jobs, you know, jobs. The jobs of the future are EVs, are renewable energy, so they want to jump on it. But again, Thailand is maybe ahead of the pack. Vietnam is, of course, has a very big manufacturing base, a lot of factories. And again, same thing. Samsung, for example, Samsung, one of the largest factory operator in Vietnam, it's Samsung. In fact, it's coming from Samsung, going to the Vietnamese government saying, we need, you know, renewable power. We need to be able to buy renewable power because we cannot, again, continue to build our phones with your, you know, coal-based energy production. So that again, it's coming from the corporations, the big corporations of this world. And that's the biggest change, you know, and means of change, because the governments have to listen, otherwise the companies will move their factories outside. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm actually curious, because you obviously know a lot about Southeast Asia, but do you know anything about, like, Latin America or Africa in terms of, like, their government and, like, renewable energy and the effect of COVID, or not at all?
Yeah, well, a little bit. Of course, we are looking at. I'm looking at it on a worldwide basis, of course, and renewable energy world is in fact quite a small world, because there are not so many companies active, or at least producing. We are an independent power producer. So out of renewables, so there are not so many doing this, at least on a large scale. So we know all the players, and all the players are everywhere in the world, and looking at moving along with these energy revolutions everywhere. Yes, in Latin America, very different situations from country to country. The most advanced ones, you know, just to have an idea, a worldwide view. The most advanced countries of a size in renewable energy, again outside of the EU and the UK also, and the US, are Australia on one side and Chile on the other side. So these two countries, Australia and Chile, will soon, and some part are already running 100% on renewables, and will soon run 100% on renewables. Talking about, of course, sizable countries, smaller countries like Costa Rica or Bhutan are already working, already running on 100% renewables, but it's just, you know, tiny countries and tiny populations. So larger countries, Chile and Australia, are on the forefront of renewable energy penetration. And it depends. You know, Brazil also is doing a lot. But of course it's a huge country and a huge population, but they are doing a lot. You know, the energy revolution is everywhere. I would say the last continent, the last frontier is, of course, Africa. In Africa, South Africa is at the forefront. South Africa on the south and Egypt in the north. Egypt is also doing a lot of solar, of wind. But again, huge population, so they have a lot of needs. In South Africa also, same thing, a lot of wind, a lot of sun, so they're doing a lot. The rest of the region, yes, of Africa, it's moving, but it's moving very slowly. So they have also concerns of level of development, level of corruption, effectiveness of government. So all other issues before talking about energy and renewable energy. But yes, we are looking. We have a broad view, of course, and we know what's going on outside.
Right. So now we're going to go more into your personal life and not so much your employment. How has COVID-19 affected you or your family's day-to-day activities, like extracurriculars that you do with your family?
Yeah, with the family, yes. Well, first of all, as I mentioned, it affected a lot my travel plans. And that's the first time, I've lived through quarantine. So I've been quarantined in Singapore for more than a month. So meaning very, nearly restricted to staying in Airbnb, so in an apartment. Not 100% of the time, but, I would say 90% of the time. And then by traveling also, I've been also through other quarantines in Vietnam and in Cambodia. So again, how it affected me personally, that's the first time I spent an entire 14 days in a room, not being able to get out and not moving from a single room, a single hotel room, several times in different different countries. So that's a very new experience. And that's changing the way you definitely you see life and you see things. Yes, of course. So maybe in personal relationship, maybe putting more value to the time being spent then with your relatives and your family, your friends, because it's scarce, more scarce. So it has been scarce. So more valuable, of course, and maybe also restrict your universe to the more close friends, close family, because you have limited time in that case to spend. So that's changing definitely the relationship, and then changing definitely the way to you see the world going forward. And maybe morbidity also, death is also something, a subject coming back with this, and you're glad to be alive. You're glad that your relatives and friends are staying alive and going through also, of course, COVID-19 illness, because some of my friends got COVID, so it was of course concerning. Some of our employees, well, no direct employees of my corporations have been infected, just their parents, basically. Some lost their parents in Vietnam, especially. So that was in Vietnam and in Thailand. So it affected again some of our employees directly, but other than that, that's all I can say. Yeah.
Has the COVID-19 outbreak affected how you communicate with your friends and your family?
Of course, definitely. Conference, teleconferencing. Whatever is the mean. It was funny because we in that case discovered new names, of course, Zoom or BlueJeans or so we looked at everything. We tested, we tried a lot of this software, because with Southeast Asia also, again, it's a little bit different. The connection, the internet connection, sometimes is difficult. So you have to try different software to see which one is using the network the best. And now, more than one year after, we're down to, in fact, or back to, I would say, the main ones. It's funny because we tried, Zoom or newcomers, Zoom, BlueJeans, different ones. And now, in fact, we're back to Google Meet and the Microsoft Teams. Because that's the ones who are the most effective in reality. So it's funny. But yes, definitely we changed that. I think it's also changing the way you think you can operate businesses. You know, I haven't been to Vietnam for 1 year, even if it's our main center of operations, and we are building, we have built two wind farms in the meantime. But I've I was not able to go there. So it's working. So in fact, yeah, maybe you know it's going to change in the future the way. It will limit definitely our physical transportation much more, you know, than we can think of, because a lot of things could be done online, in fact, and remotely, a lot more than what we think. We are also implementing a collaboration software, so tools again, new tools. In our business operations, tools which were existing, I think, prior to the pandemic, but which now are absolutely essential, you know, to have to be more effective and use your time more wisely, because it's easy, you know, at first also it's easy to lose time, to get distracted, to have so many things to do, and so many freedom to use your time. Because, of course, if you're in a room, are not able to move much, you know, the only interest you have is to interact with your you know, business partners, with your employees, staff, family, friends. So you're much more you know, at your desk, or on your phone, on your computer. But so meaning that your hours, the number of hours you're in front of your screens per day have increased, you know, dramatically, and even more when, as us, we are you know, we're dealing nearly 24/7, because between our friends in the US, in Europe, and our business dealings in Asia, it's nearly covering 24 hours. So it's extending the business hours, extending the friends and family hours much more than before. So, you know, it's you have all this time suddenly available. So at first, I think you lost a lot of your efficacy. Efficiency, you're a little bit lost on how you use your time, but after, again, I think 1 year, you get accustomed to that, and you change your priorities and the way you manage your time. So definitely new tools have emerged, and we're using now, I think, trying to be more efficient, and using internal tools, software tools, to collaborate with our different, and we've been putting that in place, and we're putting that in place right now. So it took time, but and that's a new way to organize our work, and that's, I think, it will be much better. I think you know, again, using our time more efficiently, going directly to the point, or trying to, knowing where to find documents, find you know, a trace of history of emails, opinions, and decisions. So that's pretty meaningful. Yes, definitely a meaningful impact on how we are running our businesses, and that may be one of the pandemic conclusions, is that the world will run, I think, faster and more efficiently thanks to that. Hopefully, with less carbon emissions, of course, but that, well, definitely it's the case already. You know, when you look at the air transport, you know, it's absolutely amazing. It's incredible the impact it had on air transportation. Again, now when we're looking at the skies, we're surprised to see a plane. You know, it's where you're, frankly, not maybe the case in the US anymore, but in Europe or in Asia, you're surprised when you see a plane, because for nearly 6 months or 1 year, no planes at all, nothing, zero. So, and that's a massive, of course, change. And this will not come back as fast as much as before, I think.
I'm actually curious about that, because I've personally heard around me that the air plane companies are expecting like 150% of people in the next like year. So I'm curious, like, is that just your feelings that it's not going to come back to 100%, or is it like throughout your community, like France, or in your family, or is it just a personal opinion?
No, it's numbers, you know, and you have to, I think, two things here. The regional or national flights in some countries, or the more open and countries, are back to normal, even back to or above the pre-pandemic times. Example, in the US, in China, in Vietnam, domestic flights are higher now than they were pre-pandemic, which again is, the main new situation. But it's directly linked to international traveling, which in most of the cases, and we have the numbers, and we're looking at this also as a from an energy point of view, an energy consumption point of view, are at 30% at best from earlier pre-pandemic levels internationally. So, you know, people are traveling more domestically, but they are not, or nearly not, traveling internationally anymore. So, and this, I think, the long whole flights and the intercontinent, I would say, flights. I see that. I don't see that coming back to the pre-pandemic times. I think people will have now difficulty to move continents. I think, you know, we're done. Most of the people who could travel during the last 6 months or a year, maybe are done with their domestic, you know, flights, domestic travel. They've explored everything they could explore, I think, nationally, most of the time in the national countries. So they will start flying to, you know, neighboring countries. But going back to Asia, flying to Africa, flying, you know, to Australia or you know, very new or South America, this will not resume. I think this will take time. I think people will still be scared, you know, from maybe new pandemic coming or new situation. Maybe also scared to be caught outside of their region or continent, as some have been caught, you know, outside of their countries by the pandemic. Have been very, very difficult to come back in some cases. So this will leave some lasting impressions on people, and will not will change their habit tomorrow. So the time of mass transportation, you know, mass holidays abroad and very far abroad, I think, are over and will not come back. So people will travel again, yes, of course, but I think not that long haul.
Okay,
and that's what we are seeing. So the impact on the travel, you know, travel business and travel air transportation, for example, I think it will be structural shift towards more domestic than international, and more short haul than long haul.
Okay, interesting. How are the people around you responding to the COVID-19 pandemic? And that's in France and in Southeast Asia.
How are they responding? Again, I think as I am responding. So meaning, you know, closing their world to just, the closer, their closer relationship. So I think it's broadly bringing people more together because again we are facing a common enemy. We're facing a common adverse situation. So it's bringing people together, bringing friends and business also, or staff and teams together. So that's something shared with by everyone in Europe or in Southeast Asia. I think also that the seeing the differences, I think it's also raising your sense of community participation. You're part of a community. You have to obey to the rules, because one outsider, only one maverick can wreck havoc everything. If only one get the infection and don't follow the rules, it can threaten the whole population. So, and that's what we are seeing, everywhere, and especially in Southeast Asia, where they really track people down very, very effectively, and they give the names, they show the names, they show them on TV, showing them in the papers, and saying, these are the guys not following the rules, and because of them, we have this outbreak in this part of the country. So, so this, I think, is a it's heightening the sense of community, participation. We are part of a community, and we have to follow the rules to protect ourselves and all of us. We're all in this together. I think that's mainly the main point. It's mainly, I think, Southeast Asian thing. It's a really Asian thing, because they have this, the Asian countries have and populations have this sense of community participation. They know that they are part of a broader scheme. In Europe, it's less of a thing. That we are more individualist, so we are more thinking of ourselves first, and the other ones are something else. So especially in France, we are critical of a lot of things. So we're always questioning the authority. We are always questioning decisions. Maybe like in the US, maybe a little bit more than in the US, I think. So this sense of community, participation is less, definitely less in Europe. But we have seen also, role of governments and roles of rules. Being crucial to go through these pandemic moments. So I think also, yes, from a macro picture, I think the past few quarters of this pandemic world have put in the forefront the need of a decision maker. We need a vision. We need a leader, or at least a decision making process to go through and to take the good decisions, the right decisions to fight this. And we have seen that the very big difference between the countries which have this leadership, we've had done taken harsh measures in some times compared to the ones who have done nothing. We could not do nothing. And for example, like India, the most populous country on the planet, where they're totally overwhelmed, and that they there's nothing they can do basically. So it's spreading like wildfire, and the death toll will be enormous. It's starting to be enormous, but it will be enormous even more tomorrow. Brazil, same thing. They did nothing, so it's a disaster. Compared to countries where one death from COVID is too much, is one too much. So they are really, really very, very protective. Of course, like Singapore, but it's easy because it's small population, small country. But even Vietnam, 95 million inhabitants, or Cambodia, there's just below 500 deaths, so which is for these type of countries, pretty impressive. And they're very, very, very careful of only, you know, again, one life lost is one too much. Whereas in other countries, you know, they don't care even if it's reaching millions. So it's I think it's it has changed the way we see our society's organization, and maybe the way decisions are taken or should be taken. And again, we are, I think, reassessing reassessing our expectations from what, you know, our expectations from the state, basically, and the role of the state. And again, it's obvious in the US where, yeah, the shift, of course, administration and way to look forward, but it's the same nearly everywhere. So,
awesome. In what ways do you think the pandemic is affecting people's mental health and their physical health?
Physical health, I think everybody also have been aware that being sitting on the desk every day in front of your screen is not good for your health. So I think everybody knows that now, yoga, gym, or whatever you call it, in front of your screen also, but at least moving and doing things have been exploding. People have been more health conscious, I think, or self-health conscious, thanks to that. Also because the pandemic is more affecting, you know, people in overweight or with difficult physical conditions, so that's also, you know, bringing more attention to your health. You have to take care of it if you want to go through the next pandemic, if you want. So I think yes, the level of health consciousness, I would say, is higher, definitely. I think that's the main one of the main impact of the pandemic.
Did you want to comment on people's mental health, or do you not want to?
Mental health. It's more difficult to say because again, your interaction with people is through mails, through screens, messages. So it's limiting your interactions anyway. So you talk about mental health is more difficult because you don't see the people. Well, of course you see maybe sometimes the body language on the screen, but you know that of course it's just the top of you see the face, you see just the torso, but not the rest. And so it's not the same exactly, of course, as being in person. I think it's restricting your way to assess the mental health of your friends, family, staff, colleagues, I think you it's restricting your interactions, so your assessment also, of course, of the others. So I don't know if again I can comment much more than that. It has changed your perceptions of interaction, human interaction, for sure. Mental health, I don't know. People have definitely been looking watching more screens and even for their leisure time. So is it good or not? I don't know. It's changing things anyway, yes.
Right.
But better, I don't know.
I definitely know that from like social media, people are definitely like taking the pandemic is taking a very heavy toll on their mental health, and that's just from social media, which is interesting that it's not portrayed as much in like the news, probably primary news, of like how COVID is affecting people's mental health, because that's such a big thing to talk about right now. Do you have any thoughts on how your local or state or federal leaders are responding to the crisis? And how do you think they should have done it differently, if you do?
It's a different, difficult question, but again, I've seen the two different ways to handle this from Southeast Asia to Europe, and basically it comes down to, of course, also the population readiness to obey or to abide to the rules. In Southeast Asia, of course, it's much easier to implement, and decisions are harsh, and have been very effective. But at the end, in fact, you wonder which one was the best, because most of the countries in Southeast Asia have been very effective to keep the pandemic out of the countries. To keep the death rate, of course, as you mentioned, the death toll very low, and infection rates very, very low, by just shutting down. They shut down. They didn't, discuss this, they definitely shut down the country, and had no problem with that at all, to shut down, to close the borders, shut down the operations, order the people to stay at home and not move. And people have done it, and it has been very effective to stop the pandemic. So countries like Vietnam, for example, they've been very, very, very effective, closing everything down, tracking up every case, so that for 95 million population, operations, life was really back to normal for the last 6 months, really back to normal inside of Vietnam. No more pandemic, no more cases, nothing. Domestic flights higher than before, people taking holidays, everything, life exactly as before, excepting that the country was closed to foreigners, closed to any travel from or in and out, outbound and inbound. So it was very effective to one particular stage, where now, of course, all these countries need to reopen, because again, we're starting to be vaccinated. The rest of the world is starting to be vaccinated, so we start to be reopened. And that's another set of issues, where now in these countries, they are facing a surge in infections, because they have to reopen the country, of course, to reopen to travel, international travel. And that's bringing new cases, of course. And that's bringing a new set of another round of quarantine and restrictions and everything. Well, the rest of the world, which have not been so strict from the beginning, and which have, as in Europe, for example, I've experienced, very rapid and a lot of big death toll and a lot of infections, are now going through it because we know what it is. We have vaccination underway, big time. So now again, the herd immunity is maybe coming somewhere, but anyway, all the numbers are going down. And we can see post-pandemic. The problem is, in these countries, in the Southeast Asia countries, the level of vaccination is very, very low, very, very, very low. And it was also difficult to explain to the population that you have to be vaccinated, when in the countries there are, 10 cases, 5 cases, 10 cases, 20 cases, like in Thailand or Cambodia, the vaccination rate have been very slow, very low. So, of course, now very prone to new infections. And now it's a little bit the reverse of before. You know, before, you know, you know, these countries were you know, pointing at the West, saying, you know, look at this, look at what's happening when you don't do anything, and you know, so your death toll is very high, and, you know, the pandemic is running wild. Yes, but now it's exactly the opposite. Now we're in the West, we're turning the corner, we're saying yes, but now again, 30% of the population, nearly 40, 50% of the population will be vaccinated tomorrow. So again, it's not over, but you know, it's on the way to be over. Whereas in these countries, the vaccination rate is very small, excepting the small countries like Singapore, of course, for example, or Bhutan. But the rest of the region, vaccination is very, very slow, very low. So they are very prone to new cases, and the new cases are coming. So they are reclosing, I would say, or still closing, or continuing to close the countries where the rest of the world is opening up. So to come back to your question, what was best? I don't know. You know, I can see again the reasoning and the reason why the West have done this and the East have done this, or the far Southeast Asia have done this also, but now to merge the two and to go into the new world, the new situation, is difficult. And again, of course, the end of it is we need to get to herd immunity, so everybody would get vaccinated, so there is no more pandemic. Of course, but to get there, you know, now you have to do two blocks of thinking and two attitude towards the pandemic, you know, facing each other, and that will not be easy. So for countries especially which are very tourist dependent, you know, like Thailand, like Indonesia, Singapore, that's going to be affecting them, you know, deeply, you know, it's the economic situation is very, very difficult for, and you're mentioning mental health, you know, millions and millions of people who have been working in the travel sector, Cambodia also example, out of job, and I've been out of job for the last 6 months, and if things continue, we'll continue to be out of job for the next 6 months. So how long could they live like this? I don't know. And the states are not very rich, so they cannot pay, they cannot give benefits like in the West or like in Singapore. So that's maybe now the beginning of the problem for these countries.
What do you think about the U.S.'s way of doing it? Because obviously they didn't have a full lockdown. They never really had a quarantine. And there was a huge panic at the very beginning when we all saw the pictures of the toilet paper running out and, you know, no more pasta, no more bread, like things like that. And I'm just curious because you also mentioned Australia, who is now open, like, clubs are open, restaurants are open, it's pre-pandemic, sorry. So I'm just curious that, like, there's such a disparity there that it's like, what was the right way of doing it?
Yes, careful, I'm careful. Australia is, again, also back to normal life inside of Australia, but Australia is closed to the world. Closed, totally closed, and have been closed even for Australians. And it was, you know, a big debate because you know, for some you know, Australian nationals being locked up outside of Australia and even with the passport cannot go in because they say no, nobody can enter Australia anymore for quite a while, even if you're the passport holder. So just to protect themselves. So yes, you're right. They are now back to normal, but because they totally shut down the country from international travel. So and it could be again the same case as Vietnam, as I was just mentioning. So but the problem is really ahead of them. In fact, what's going to happen tomorrow? Because if they reopen, they will import cases, and it will, you know, it's just delaying for me. It's just delaying the issue. In the case of the US, it's a little more difficult because you have nearly as many answers as states in the US. So I think you can see, if you follow the situation closely, you have seen also the different, way to handle it from New York to California on one hand, to on the other hand, of course, Texas or the Midwest states where they were not doing much or not doing anything about it. So. It's really down to the usual American question. If you want to have a motorbike and go on the highway without a helmet, without any protection or anything, and kill yourself at the first accident. Yeah, if you want to do it, do it. But because it's again supposed to be the land of freedom. But on the other hand, I think what we have seen is that facing this kind of pandemic, you need to have a government response. You need to have someone in the leadership, and again, for example, to run the vaccination, because again, the way out, I think the only way out is vaccination. To get this vaccination, you have to have rules. You have to have, government dealing with large corporations, large pharma corporations. And if you do nothing, you get nothing. So definitely, I think the freedom for all and God for all, I think didn't work. And you really had you have to have someone. Taking decisions in that case, maybe not for your individual freedom, but at least to get out of the pandemic. So I would say more on the vaccination front. Definitely, the federal decisions were key, and have been key to get out of this situation. And then, of course, the lockdown, not lockdown. Closing the schools, not closing the schools. It's maybe down to the local community decision and local states decision, which have been handled very, very differently from one place to another. So that's maybe, the right answer is local. So let's local decide. But definitely to get out of this, you need to have a federal decision, a national decision, definitely. I think something which you didn't mention and have been not been stressed out enough is the COVID checks. The money which have been spent by the states, by the government, to try to compensate the loss of revenues that implied by the pandemic. This is massive. This is absolutely gigantic. Never been seen at this level before for a numerous of countries, and the US, of course, being one of the very first. I think Singapore. In that case, we could think of also Singapore, which we have never seen and never heard of such a support scheme and states using debt mainly, but raising money to give money and to give grants for free. In France, it's loans. They give you loans, long term loans. To businesses, to small businesses, to stay afloat. But I don't know if it exists. I think it exists also in the US, but it's more the checks. You receive, every American citizen received a check to compensate maybe, or to try to help through this period. So this is major. This is absolutely major, and it will have, and it's starting to have an implication, of course, on the economic rebound of the different countries involved. And the bigger the check, I would say, the bigger the rebound. And it, of course, it goes with the vaccination. You know, if you have the check with the vaccination, as the current administration apparently in the US is implementing, that's the way out. And I think maybe this, that's the lesson out of it. You cannot leave that to the freedom and leave that to everyone's decision. Somebody have to take care of the group and of the the society for you. So I guess that's the answer. Talking about the US, I think definitely the checks with vaccination was were the way out and the only way out.
Right, I would agree. This is a more personal question, but how does this pandemic compare to other big events that have happened to you in your lifetime?
I think one micro picture again, one of the other big events which have changed the world, I think is, well, could be related to the US also, but it's a worldwide issue, is it terrorism and 9/11. Of course, 9/11 have changed the world for sure, and the way we can see religions or extremism or and terrorism for sure. So this, I think I would compare the two, because again, the 9/11 or terrorism have changed the way we look at things and part of the world. Pandemic have done the thing, done the same, I think. Will it change? You know, we mentioned the way we work now, the new organization, the new corporation organization. I didn't mention that before, but for example, in people get used to work at home, and that means also in terms of corporate organization, that in Singapore, for example, we had three different offices. We closed down two, and we are using only one now. We have asked our employees, do you prefer to stay at home and work from home, 90% of the time, 50% of the time, 0% of the time? And they said, nearly 50 to 60% of the time, I prefer to stay at home and work at home. And I'm more and more effective at home because I can, manage my time, my family, my whatever. And in fact, we are seeing as a corporation also that they are more effective because they are longer hours. They stay, they work more outside of business hours, and they're more effective. So in fact, we are using offices only for meetings, mainly only for meetings, or really needed, stay or meet with colleagues 1 or 2 days per week, and that's it. So that's a big change. That's a big change which is going to last, and that's a worldwide impact. I think it's not only us. I think it's everywhere the same. So the way we see work, and especially office work, will change, has changed because of the pandemic, for sure. That will maybe be the major lasting impact of the pandemic. Other than that, I think tomorrow we'll get used to get shots, for whatever new disease will be around, very regularly. For the moment, my generation, we got shots every 10 years, basically, and at best, even if you think about it, if you don't think about it, you get shot when you're young and that's it, that's over. Now I think it's going to come and we'll get used to getting a shot of whatever vaccine is there every year, 6 months, 2 years, I don't know, but more, much more regularly to be protected. So I think that's also here to stay. Small thing, just a habit, but that's here to stay also for millions and millions of people. I think all around the world. I'm hoping, I'm really hoping and dreaming of having this kind of vaccine passport to be able to resume, of course, international travel. That's important for me. So I hope that it's going to be restricted to, of course, vaccinated people tomorrow, and that everybody will be vaccinated. So it will not be an issue anymore at one stage, but still we're not there yet. People are resisting it. People are dancing the use of it. So if they don't, if they don't comply and they don't want to, they have to stay at home and don't travel in that case, and don't put me or don't put others in danger. So yeah, but that would be here to stay, I think. That's the main one I can see today.
That's actually a huge debate within all communities, I think, of whether you should be forced to get your vaccine in order to go and eat at a restaurant or to go travel. So it's interesting that you're talking about the vaccine passport, because in all countries, mainly in the US, I've heard, many people don't want to get vaccinated and don't believe in the vaccine. So then what's your take on that? And what would be the answer to that if people are just refusing to get vaccinated? What happens to them?
I think the answer to this is just education. People who don't want to be vaccinated are not educated. They have no idea of what they're talking about. But again, in France, we are the country of Pasteur. Pasteur have invented vaccination. Why some diseases have been eradicated from the surface of the planet? Because of this, because of vaccination. So plague, you don't hear about the plague anymore. Polio is also something you don't hear about anymore. And it was huge diseases before. Because of what? Because we got a vaccine. And so people, just forget about it. But that's crucial. That's, part of the human evolution and beating the diseases and finding cure to diseases. So I don't understand, I absolutely don't understand people who don't want to be vaccinated. You can be Amish. I don't know the Amish, but I can, refuse the progress, the technology progress. You can refuse that. Yes. You can stay in your hut in the forest and stay with your horses if you want, and don't use modern life. Stay out of modern life. Yes, but if you go into modern life and want to live in modern life, you have to be vaccinated. There's no other way. For me, it has to be mandatory for sure. Like voting. Voting must be mandatory. Also, some countries it's mandatory. For example, in Belgium, in Europe, it's mandatory to vote. If you don't vote, you get fined. Here it's the same thing. If you're not vaccinated, you have to get fined, and you have to be restricted in your freedom. There's no point on this. No debate possible. Again, matter of education. People who are discussing vaccination as not educated, have nothing, they don't know what they're talking about.
So in terms of the vaccine, obviously people were scared at the beginning because of how fast it was created, because normal vaccines take years and so much testing that this came up in 6 months, something like that. So were you personally scared of the vaccine and its long-term effects or even short-term effects that it could have on your body?
No, I think, you can question it. Of course, you can, as you just mentioned, yes, it has been, turbocharged and the time development have been totally compressed, of course. But also maybe the urgency was there compared to before. I believe in scientific progress. Maybe of course nothing is perfect. So everything has drawbacks and maybe We'll discover tomorrow that, and we're starting to discover that the coverage is not 100%. So the effectiveness is not 100% for sure, and that there will be variants of the virus that will not be, but the vaccination will be not effective against. Yes, sure. But the big picture is we need this. And even if there are flaws in the technology, it will be refined, one day or another. So and that's definitely best to have it even not 100% sure and protective than having nothing. I think definitely whatever in scientific progress there is, you must take it, and go for it. I've not been scared by this, even by the second impact, second effect, like the side effects of some of the vaccines. Yes, of course, there will be always side effects, and every medication, you take, you look at the conditions, of course, there are side effects. So there will be always side effects. But is it a reason not to take the medication itself? No, most of the time, no. So I think no. Vaccination is exactly the same. Yes, you have some side effects. Yes, will not cover 100% of the cases. But it's definitely better than nothing. So we definitely need to embrace technology, and as you mentioned, in this kind of situation, this also brings forward some new technology which might have taken years and years to be developed, but in that case it was weeks and weeks because we cannot afford to wait. So that's good also, and it was impressive, absolutely impressive, absolutely stunning to see that it's a worldwide, of course, effort or financed effort by some corporations and some researchers. And the new technologies have been found. New vaccine technologies have been discovered and implemented at a very, very large scale. And that's, maybe that's the way humanity have been always going. It's you have a crisis. And to overcome this crisis, you have to find new solutions, technology or organizational or whatever, and new leaders. And that's how it works. And that it worked quite well in this one, I think.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that it worked well. I think also the amount of money that went into the vaccine preparation was absolutely incredible. It was insane amount of money. I also wanted to ask you, and this is one of my last questions, one of them, what is your thoughts on nurses and doctors? Because I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was clapping at their windows at a certain hour for the health practitioners who were dedicating all their time to this, saving our lives. And now they are not recognized. They are depressed. It's scientifically proven that they are the suicide rates are through the roof, the depression rates are through the roof. What are your thoughts on that, on the community decision to ignore health professionals after 6 months?
Well, I don't think we ignore them. We just take them as granted. They are offering a service to the society, and we're paying for the service. Or hope that they are well paid or well compensated for their service. But again, we cannot continue forever to thank them for what they're doing, because that's their job. They decided to do it. They had a job. Of course, again, there are some different in level in dedication. Of course, the level of dedication they had and they put into it at the first was amazing. And of course, again, impressive. And we have to thank them most of them for that. But it's here to stay. The issue is, the problem is that these health issues and these pandemic issues are here to stay, obviously. So they have to organize themselves and their life and their dedication also for the long run. So we cannot, as society, continue to clap every, Saturday or Sunday or whatever, because they are brave. Yes, they are brave. Yes, it's fantastic. But again, we are here for the long run. So think twice. Yes, you have to be brave. But if it's part of the job, that's part of the job. That's it. You need to organize, and we need as a society to organize to provide them a good care, good pay, good working environment, because that's going to be their working environment for the next centuries. So I think that was great at first, but we need to find a more long-term organization where we don't rely on only the fantastic dedication or braveness or I don't know of few of them going forward. We need to find a whole organization of the healthcare services to respond to such an event in the future. Again, it could be comparable to a war. At war, you're very proud and you support your troops, of course, the first day, the second day, the first month. Yes, fantastic, go for it, boys, protect us. But after 2 years, you said, okay, yes, fantastic, but if you are here to have a war for 100 years, maybe we'll think twice of our organization, our support. We have to continue to support you, of course. But again, you choose it. You have to be paid for it, compensated for it. We have to be organized for it. But it's not. We're not counting on your, exceptional disposition every day. So it needs to be a common practice and common organization also. So I think yes, it was great at first, but now we need to have something more long term thought and long term organized.
Yeah, that's. I would definitely agree. I think it wasn't going to be sustained in the long run.
Exactly, yeah.
So my last question, actually, of this interview is one that's going to be thought-provoking. What can you imagine your life being like in a year?
I think it will be pretty much back to normal, in fact, because again, we'll be, I hope, most of us will be vaccinated and the pandemic will be over, or most of the pandemic will be over. I think, as I mentioned, that, international travel will stay less than before. So it will be good for me, so because I will have more rooms in my planes, so that's great. But because I will personally continue, of course, because my life is between continents, so different continents. So I don't see myself restricting me much in my international travel. Of course, in my traveling, in my everyday travel, I think I will restrict myself. I will not travel as much as before. Again, I was traveling every week, in the past, internationally, so from one country to another. So I don't think I will travel that much in the future, in one year time or more. I think I will work also more remotely, less time at the office. That's for sure. I think it proved that most of us, and with our office work, we can work nearly wherever we are. So that's good. So I think that's here to stay also, and I might continue to even more work from anywhere I could be. So that's in 1 year time, I think. What I'm thinking of, yes, it's I would say basically back to normal, and for my business, I hope not back to normal, back to more than normal, and resume our growth the growth of our sector, growth of our activities. That's not back to normal in that case. It's more back to the growth trajectory, or even better growth. I've seen better growth than before, I think, and I hope so. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much for answering all my questions and taking the time.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for your questions and thought-provoking questions. Yes.
Thank you.